Hi, this is Josh Barrow. On Thursday, October 20th, KCRW is coming out of our basement studios for a civilized, yet provocative, Left, Right, and Center Live. Join us at the beautiful Ace Hotel Theater in downtown Los Angeles for a night of amusing and insightful commentary on this unique election season. I'll be joined by Kelly Goff, Gene Sperling, and Mona Charon as we dissect Trump versus Clinton, Democrat versus Republican, and fact versus fiction. Buy your tickets today at kcrw.com/LRCLive.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call them fair.
Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump made their cases that they were ready to be commander-in-chief. Clinton faced tough questions about her handling of classified information. Trump praised Vladimir Putin and insisted he has a secret plan to defeat ISIS. And libertarian candidate Gary Johnson made news by not knowing what Aleppo is. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Josh Barrow, senior editor at Business Insider. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine. Our special guest is Rick Wilson. He's a Republican political consultant who is currently a senior advisor to presidential candidate Evan McMullen. Welcome to you all. So it wasn't quite a debate, but Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump appeared on the same stage at the NBC News Commander-in-Chief Forum, and I think it's fair to say they both had rocky performances, though Trump's rockiness overshadowed Clinton's. Clinton spent much of her interview defending herself against concerns she mishandled classified information.
I communicated about classified material on a wholly separate system. I took it very seriously. When I traveled, I went into one of those little tents that I'm sure you've seen around the world, because we didn't want there to be any potential for someone to have embedded a camera to try to see whatever it is that I was seeing that was designated, marked, and headed as classified.
Let us
know. So I did exactly what I should have done, and I take it very seriously, always have, always will.
So I think we've reached a point of backlash on the media coverage of the email scandal. The Washington Post had an editorial on Friday saying, quote, "Imagine how history would judge today's Americans if looking back on this election, the record showed that voters empowered a dangerous man because of a minor email scandal." So I guess the question is, looking at Hillary Clinton's handling of these questions, has she finally put this to bed? Have we talked about this enough?
She's never really going to put it to bed because she can't give an honest answer, which is that she set up the system in violation of all sorts of rules and arguably laws just to avoid legitimate inquiries into her public record from the press and from Congress. And she can't say that. And there's also no good answer to the question that the former member of the military asked, which is that if I had done this and handled classified material in this way, I would have been in serious trouble and perhaps prosecuted. And you can see the look on that guy's face as she gave the answer. I'm just not buying it. Because again, there's not a good answer. The FBI basically gave her a pass because she's the one person standing between the country and a Donald Trump presidency. But the stuff is going to continue to dribble out, and it's the irony of her stonewall and obstruction is all this stuff, calendars and emails that could have been released long ago, is now dribbling out in the heat of a presidential election. And at the very least, there's embarrassing material in there, as we've seen the last 2 weeks.
You know, Josh, I thought we were going to talk about the commander-in-chief forum of the other night. You know, in this campaign, we've witnessed media malpractice of different kinds. I'd say this was the latest installment. I think it's appropriate that Hillary Clinton was asked about her emails, though it took Matt Lauer a third of his time. And but they're extraordinarily important questions, challenging issues facing this country around the world. There was no question about nuclear policy. Think of what we've just witnessed again with North Korea. There was no question about China or the refugee crisis, mass surveillance. So I think it was a masterclass in how not to hold candidates accountable on both fronts. On Trump, he had some big whoppers. And, you know, Hillary Clinton got a pass too when she said we're not going to send ground troops to Syria or Iraq. We have them there, right? So I think it's media degradation and a failure to hold the debates that are urgently needed in this election. That, to me, is more important. And Rich, I guess, doesn't accept, and I'm usually the one who doesn't accept FBI findings, but the FBI seems to me to have put the Hillary Clinton email situation to rest.
But even if you accept the legal analysis and that Comey came out with,
yeah,
just because something is not technically illegal doesn't mean it was appropriate or shouldn't be a subject of debate.
I think I just said it's appropriate. It was appropriate that she was asked about him. But I think this criminalization of the emails has now expired.
But you have the Washington Post and others now working themselves up into a lather that you shouldn't even ask about it because it distracts from the awfulness of Donald Trump.
I write for the Washington Post, but I certainly don't ascribe to everything they say.
Well, but isn't
nor do I.
Rich, isn't what you said there key, though, that Hillary Clinton is the thing that stands in between us and a Donald Trump presidency? That's an important consideration in thinking about this.
But not, that, you know, that's not what Matt Lauer shouldn't go up there and say, you know, I need to be allied with Hillary Clinton because she's standing between Donald Trump and the president. That's not his role.
I agree with Rich.
And she was not his role. And he wasn't particularly bad.
You know,
he cut Donald Trump on the sexual assault thing and created a vulnerability there. When he nailed him down on the plan, no plan for ISIS, he created problems for Donald Trump. And even if he had pushed back on Trump saying he opposed Iraq from the beginning, what did people expect to happen? Donald Trump was going to, you know, collapse like a guilty witness in a Perry Mason drama?
Rich,
no, he'd find a way to talk
Rich,
around it the way
the
he
role,
always does.
That's the role of journalists to, first of all, push for truth and factual accuracy. And the fact that he caused problems for Donald Trump, he sort of fell into it.
I mean, Trump says, look, oh, this is a horrible problem, the sexual assault in the military. Lauer pulls out a tweet from years ago and says, look, you tweeted this. What do you think of that?
The tweet said basically, well, what did you expect when you put men and women together? You're going to get these sexual assaults.
But think of the think of the vast areas. First of all, it should have been 2 hours.
I agree.
But, you know, there are vast areas that demand attention in a presidential campaign that are just being swept off.
Right. But that was largely a product of it just being half an hour for each candidate, which the candidates demanded, not Matt Lauer.
Rick, I want to get you in here. What do you think we learned from the forum?
Well, I think we learned that the classic pattern of Clintonian behavior is that they're always trimming. They're always, you know, they got some, I like to call it the, you know, the hillbilly hustle that they've always had since Arkansas. And even when the crime isn't that big, they cover it up, they obfuscate, and she digs herself into a deeper hole. You know, a lot of this email thing could have been resolved a year ago if she would come out and said, I screwed up. This was wrong. I made a mistake. And instead, we've had 15 different iterations of what really happened. Instead, we had all this sort of, you know, coming and going about what the investigation was and wasn't, what's really in the emails, what were the 30,000 emails that were deleted. So they always buy themselves more problems because they're always trying to play games. And they're masters at it in a lot of ways. And Republicans are always terrible at playing the opposite side of that coin. But, you know, you saw this with Hillary the other night. Again, she just keeps digging. And all the evidence that keeps rolling out one drip, drop, drip at a time, it hurts more than actually tearing the Band-Aid off in the beginning with her would have done.
Let me quote Bernie Sanders, who I think could have given Trump a run for his money. You know, that first debate where Bernie Sanders was criticized by many because he said, to paraphrase, enough with those damn emails. And then what's missed is he went on to say, we got a hollowed out middle class, 27 million living in poverty, enormous disparities of wealth, and a question of whether we're a democracy or an oligarchy. None of those questions are being asked because there are appropriate questions to be asked of Hillary Clinton, but I do think we're witnessing the final culmination of the criminalization of politics. Clintons have always felt entitled, played by their own rules, but it is not a criminal matter at this point, and it has not endangered our national security.
Well, let's talk about one of those
other
criticisms.
We don't actually know that, Katrina. We still don't know that, and that's something that is still a matter that's out there, and we don't know. You know, look, a lot of penetrations by foreign intelligence services don't leave a lot of fingerprints. We don't know that answer yet. So, I'm willing to hold that in abeyance, but we do not know that we haven't had our national security directly compromised. We don't know that.
Well, the Clinton campaign, I think, is making a mistake driving what are unsubstantiated allegations that Russian state hackers have hacked our electoral system. On the DNC files, that seems to have more intelligence agreement. But boy, are they driving that hard.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because one of the ways that Donald Trump made news in this forum was with his praise for Vladimir Putin. Let's play some sound of that.
If he says great things about me, I'm going to say great things about him. I've already said he is really very much of a leader. I mean, you can say, oh, isn't that a terrible thing he called him? I mean, the man has very strong control over a country. Now, it's a very different system, and I don't happen to like the system. But certainly in that system, he's been a leader far more than our president has been a leader. We have a divided country.
Subsequently, Donald Trump went on Larry King's show on Russia Today, the Russian state-owned news network that broadcasts in English in the United States, and said that he does not believe that Russia was behind the DNC hack. And so this, watching Clinton and Trump in this forum, and it's not just the emails, Clinton, you know, said she made a mistake supporting the Iraq war. So there, we were also talking about, you know, substantive, very substantive policy failures on the Clinton side. P.G. O'Rourke said in May when he was endorsing Hillary Clinton that she's wrong about everything, but at least she's wrong within normal parameters. And so, yes, there's a long list of foreign policy complaints to make about Hillary Clinton. But when you have an opponent who's up there talking about what a strong leader Vladimir Putin is and claiming that in the classified intelligence briefing he received that intel officers expressed their dissatisfaction with Obama-Clinton policies and suggested that he might replace a large number of generals within the month after he took office and said we should have somehow left Iraq but taken the oil, it's just so out there and so unacceptable on foreign policy that you sort of have to accept whatever very negative aspects you see in the Clinton record.
So wait. Trump is unfit to be commander-in-chief. He traffics in insults, lies, is an egomaniac. But we are witnessing a dangerous politics of stigmatizing and smearing those who are trying to challenge this dangerous Cold War consensus and argue that those who argue we need a different relationship with Russia. Listen, it is not pro-Putin or pro-Russian. It is simply sober realism to argue that we need to find ways to partner with Russia, resolving Syria, nuclear proliferation, combating ISIS, on climate crisis. And I think it's a very dangerous tactic. I've always believed that a candidate governs in the way he or she campaigns and the way Hillary Clinton is campaigning. It's Alice in Wonderland. We've seen this before where the right has demonized progressives, liberals, the left, for being soft on Russia. It is tragedy that Trump is the lousiest messenger for a politics that needs to be heard. We need a robust debate about what a U.S.-Russian relationship should be, not this congealed, dangerous Cold War consensus.
I would say, one, most people do not hear Trump's remarks or about Russia the way a lot of us who follow very closely do. I mean, a lot of us just feel contemptuous disbelief when we hear him say these things. But most people, oh, okay, we should try to get along with Russia, and if they help us with ISA, that's great. You know, they kind of hear it at that level. So I don't think it hurts them as much as some insiders might think. But on the merits, it's just appalling. I mean, what kind of principle is it that if a foreign leader says nice things about you, you say nice things
He's
about him?
Media.
You know, in the 1970s, if Pol Pot had praised Donald Trump, would Donald Trump have said great things about the Khmer Rouge? And, you know, Trump bracketed his remarks a little bit by saying, you know, Putin's operating within the system that I don't support. But still, his sentiments about Putin are profoundly un-Republican with a small R. And may we never have a leader who is as strong as Vladimir Putin in that sense.
Well, they're both authoritarians. Country. That's interesting. I think Trump is an American authoritarian and Putin is a Russian authoritarian. I will say Putin gave an interview to Bloomberg News just a few days ago condemning the shock tactics of both campaigns and the mistranslation. Putin never said Trump was brilliant. There is a word, yarky. It means flamboyant or colorful. Right. He is that.
Mm-hmm. But it's not just Trump. Trump had his running mate out there this week saying that it's indisputable that Vladimir Putin has been a stronger leader for his country's national interest than Barack Obama has been in the United States. So I worry that this is not just a quirk of Donald Trump's personality, that it's managing to infect the party. Rick, what did you make?
Well, I do think there's a part of Trump's base that idolizes Putin. The entire alt-right segment of Trump's base, they think Vladimir Putin is exactly the kind of authoritarian, you know, white ethno-state leader that they've been dreaming of. And they think of Putin and Trump as going hand in hand into a glorious all-white future. And I think that Trump knows that, and that's one of the reasons. But I do think he is an egomaniac. He's been played. Putin's an intelligence officer. And, in the intelligence world, there's an old acronym called MICE, money, ideology, compromise, and ego. It looks like Donald Trump has been played on all four of those axes, which is a pretty rare thing in the intelligence world. And they've figured out that Putin and the Russians, I almost said Soviets, huh? That's how old I am. Putin and the Russians have figured out that, you know, how to play Donald Trump like a fiddle. The greatest negotiator in the world is getting rolled by a former KGB officer. And they know to play to Trump's ego. They know to play to his vanity. And so, you know, the cheering section around Trump that reflexively backs anything he does, it's also a sign of how collapsed the Republican Party has become around its core. Because, you know, and you know, as Katrina noted, we've often criticized and demonized people on the left for being in support of the former Soviet Union. And as I like to say, rightly. But these are folks now who are looking at everything about Putin's values as being an authoritarian and thinking, yeah, I want that here. And that's why the Republican Party is sort of fracturing right down the center right now.
I do think it's a myth to think Putin prefers. I mean, there is a debate inside Russia. They want stability. They want someone who's predictable. And I don't think Mr. Trump has that character and temperament.
He'd be crazy not to prefer Donald Trump. And, you know, another irony here, Trump is supposed to be a nationalist and apparently doesn't care and wants to look past the fact that the Russians hacked the system of an American political party.
We don't know. But I will say one thing. All this talk about hacking our electoral system feeds Donald Trump's rigging the system. The major threat to our electoral integrity is the Republican assault on voting rights. That and the fact that this country has never invested fully in the infrastructure of voting is a scandal.
Our government believes that Russia was behind the DNC hack.
It is still unsubstantiated.
I do think on the subject of does Putin prefer Trump, I don't think Trump is literally a Russian agent. I think he's being used as a useful idiot.
Not consciously.
I do think, though, that if Trump were to become president, he might end up in a situation where his overtures toward Russia lead Russia to overreach somewhere in Europe. And then Donald Trump would be extremely offended by this and feel betrayed by Vladimir Putin, who he said such nice things about, and could actually lead us into a situation of greater escalation with Russia than we would see under a Clinton presidency.
One thing we should be doing is talking about how crazy our nuclear policy is. We should have no first use, and we should get off these weapons off of hair trigger alert. So a Donald Trump would not be as dangerous.
We need to take a quick break. Let us know what you thought about the Commander-in-Chief Forum at kcrw.com/LRC on our Facebook page or message our Twitter account. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Check out KCRW's all-news channel, News 24. Programming from KCRW, NPR, BBC, and more. 24 hours a day. Go to kcrw.com/news24 or listen on KCRW's app.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Josh Barrow of Business Insider and MSNBC. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Katrina VandenHeuvel of The Nation magazine, and Rick Wilson, Republican consultant and advisor to independent presidential candidate Evan McMullen, is also with us. So it looked like Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson was having a pretty good week. Mitt Romney had tweeted that he'd like to see Johnson in the debates. Currently, Johnson is polling below the 15% threshold you have to meet in order to get in. Then Johnson went on Morning Joe, and he got stumped by this question.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Well, with regard to Syria, I do think that it's a mess. I think that the only way that we deal with Syria is to join hands with Russia to diplomatically bring that at an end.
So, Rich, Gary Johnson and his running mate Bill Weld, both former Republican governors, seem like they ought to be tempting for many Republicans who hate Donald Trump. Is he still tempting after this?
Well, anyone who thought Gary Johnson was fit to be the next president of the United States and commander-in-chief would be sorely disappointed by that interview. I don't think there are many people who fell into that category. He's a place to park a protest vote, or if you're a libertarian purist with certain liberal tendencies in there. He's a good fit for you. I'm not particularly enamored of him on a number of issues. One, I'm just not a libertarian. Two, I prefer a libertarian who's good on religious liberty, which is a core freedom in this country. And I'm not an open borders guy, so I don't find him very alluring.
Rick, Rich mentioned protest votes. You're working for Evan McMullen. You guys have gotten on, what is it, about 20 state ballots now?
That's right, about 20 today. We've got three or four more coming.
He doesn't have a running mate. Is this a serious effort to get Evan McMullen elected president of the United States, or is this somewhere for people to park votes that they don't feel comfortable giving to Donald Trump?
Look, it's absolutely a serious effort, and the fact that we are vetting candidates to become the vice presidential running mate on the ticket, we had to move very quickly because we've put a two-year campaign together in a space of 90 days. So on a few of the states that required a placeholder, we had a placeholder, but we're working right now to vet some vice presidential folks who I think would be substantive and serious people by anybody's standards. And the fact of the matter is Evan is running a serious campaign. We're trying to get national ballot access as widely as possible. We're out there right now building out a grassroots effort that has frankly stunned all of us. We've got in the space of a month, about 125,000 people have signed up to either volunteer, donate, or be on our email update. It's pretty amazing. It's very Bernie-like in a lot of ways. But Evan's serious in another way. Look, Gary Johnson would be a great president of Reddit, but he's not a serious person. He is not a guy, he's not a guy who's really thought through a lot of this stuff. And the values mismatch for conservatives is tremendous. And,
I wish, let me be the realist. I wish we could have serious third-party candidates in this country. Right now, we're a duopoly. Until there's a fundamental commitment to electoral reform and ballot access, a fundamental piece of that, third-party candidates drive issues onto the agenda that the two major parties don't want to hear. Bernie Sanders' great strength, and he debated long and hard about running inside or outside the Democratic Party, was he drove issues into the party. Wish he'd driven some more, but he drove issues in that will define that party moving forward if the movement around him continues to stay mobilized and engaged. I think it's just on a media level, I think it's a sad irony that more Americans heard about Aleppo the day of Gary Johnson's pretty odious gaffe than they had before. And some of that is if you watch cable TV, which is where a lot of people get their news, it's like a bad George Carlin joke. He used to have this segment, this skit, like nuclear war after the sports. You're watching these endless, and Rich and I have been, I think, complicit in this, endless debates about Hillary's cough or something like that. And the crawl is Aleppo under siege. Syrian refugees reach high, So it's just, I think, a travesty that our news has failed the public interest.
Well, so let's talk about this substantively then, because this came to the attention because Gary Johnson didn't even know the name of this city. But it's not clear to me that Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton has any particular vision about what would be done to address the civil war and the humanitarian crisis in Syria. Donald Trump claims to have a secret plan that he might throw out if the generals come up with a better secret plan, although he thinks a lot of the generals are very bad. And Hillary Clinton, one of her signature things had been the idea that we should have a no-fly zone in part of Syria. But the problem with that, especially now, given the Russian operations that exist there, that would essentially entail a promise to shut down Russian aircraft operating over Syria, which I don't think would be a good idea and also wouldn't be something that we could credibly promise to do. So is anyone out there with something better than what Gary Johnson has about what to actually do about what's happening in Aleppo?
No, not really. Donald Trump actually is a little more specific about Syria. He says he'd establish safe havens, which would be a pretty significant military commitment. And between his policy of safe havens in Syria and stealing Iraq's oil, both of those would be major ground commitments if he really took it seriously. But I think, the policy that I would support in theory, I don't know how practical it is doing more to help forces allied with us on the ground, because I don't believe any diplomatic solution, which where this ultimately has to go, is possible absent serious progress against the Assad regime. And what we saw in the Balkans, which was a kind of similar situation in the 1990s, you didn't get an agreement until you really pushed back the Serbs. That's why Richard Holbrooke, who helped forge that agreement in the Balkans, was such a strong proponent of a bombing campaign there.
But I think the UN's chief humanitarian person in July said this is going to end, it must end with a political solution, not a military victory. I do think you need safe havens. I think you need an arms embargo if that's possible. I think you need humanitarian assistance to the hilt. But people who have followed this carefully, and I admire him, many do not. Former President Jimmy Carter wrote an important op-ed in April 2015 about the five or six nations which had to come together. And Donald Trump and others argue that we need to work together with Russia to combat ISIS. I fear the U.S. policy is still divided. You have a defense secretary who says we should keep going in with weapons, and you have a secretary of state who every day is trying to negotiate with Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov. And so it's a divided policy. And the question of whether Assad, who is a brutal dictator who should be taken to the International Criminal Court, must step down first, or we confront ISIS first, bedevils U.S. policy. Until that's clarified, I don't see help for the most important people in this, or the civilians and the millions of refugees who are going to undermine Europe's security in the end.
Rick, does Evan have an answer for this?
You know, Evan McMullen has a unique perspective on this because he served as a CIA undercover operations officer in the Middle East, North Africa, and South Asia for 10 years. And he understands from a very, you know, granular ground level basis of what we have to do in the region, which is to improve the way that we're going at this problem. It's a complex multivariate problem right now, and we've got to get to the point where we're using American intelligence, American diplomacy, all the tools of statecraft, as well as a tighter and more disciplined military approach to eliminating the Assad regime and to eliminating ISIS from the region.
You know, but hasn't the policy of the United States been for years that both ISIS and Assad should go? I don't know that what's missing here is moral clarity.
I think the United States has dropped that quietly, but it's still a struggle within the administration.
The problem is that was the stated goal, but it wasn't backed up with the programmatic things you have to do, and based on actual experience, which is something that, like I said, that Evan has a unique perspective on because he spent 10 years working as an undercover intelligence officer in those sort of areas. And really understands a lot of the dynamics that are going on here in a way that's much more on the ground than the distant sort of Washington, D.C., you know, what are the bounds of the permissible in the D.C. culture of foreign policy culture.
Well, we've reached that time once again for our famed left, right, and center rants featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Rich Lowry, it's your soapbox.
As we were discussing earlier, this is an election of strange, not to say loathsome, bedfellows. Some conservatives have a newfound respect for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange because Assange hates Hillary Clinton and now wants to torpedo her campaign, even though these same conservatives used to consider him a quasi-terrorist. My friends would do well to remember that the enemy of my domestic political opponent can still be a reprehensible creep.
Katrina Vandenhoevel.
So it's interesting. I follow. There's a campaign launching next week to seek a pardon for Edward Snowden from President Obama, in the belief that Snowden, an American whistleblower, acted on the conviction that the public had a right and need to know about a global mass surveillance system that exceeded the limits of the Constitution, and that American democracy has benefited from Snowden's actions.
Rick Wilson.
I'd like to have a brief rant about the American media and the way they talk to and about Donald Trump. You know, we've reached this point now, we're well over a year into this process, where they should know that Donald Trump is going to lie like a rug every time he opens his mouth, and they rarely call him on it. They rarely stop the interview, blow the whistle, and say, no, your mic's off. Answer yes or no about this question. And the necessary toughness in the American media that's been lacking in this entire campaign is something that isn't left or right. It's just due diligence to preserve the republic, where I think aggressive journalism has a strong role to play.
For my rant, I'm excited to announce we'll be doing a special live episode of Left, Right, and Center from the beautiful Ace Theater in downtown Los Angeles. That'll be on the evening of Thursday, October 20th. We're going to be looking back at what has been the weirdest campaign of my lifetime, and I certainly hope will be the weirdest campaign of my life also going forward. We will be looking ahead to the election that at that point will be just 2.5 weeks away. I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. We're going to have a number of surprises for you, so please check that out. You can find out more information at kcrw.com/LRCLive. That's all we have time for today. I want to thank Rich Lowry, Katrina Vandenhoevel, and Rick Wilson. Laura Dinemillion produced today's program. Our technical director is Phil Richards. Katie Berskins is our production assistant. I'm Josh Barrow. Thank you for joining us, and tune in next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes, and share your comments at kcrw.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.